From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for Christmas Week 2021. The Bucks and the Packers are both working on Christmas Day. I thought they had a better union than that. The Bucks meet the Boston Celtics at the Forum at 1:30, and the Packers welcome the Browns to Lambeau at 3:30. I give you those start times so you can plan your Christmas around them. A 54-year-old Florida woman is charged with attempted murder for trying to poison her longtime boyfriend. When asked why she did it, she said because he was just so stupid. I just like to have a theme. Well, we have a theme now. A Nashville car dealer tried to hire a hitman to kill his ex-girlfriend. But before anyone died, the car dealer left a 5-star Yelp review on the hitman's website. You can't make up this stuff. Who saw this coming? San Francisco has suspended its cannabis sales tax in order to help legal dispensaries compete with drug dealers. It sounds like people are just looking for a bargain. Minnesota has an annual Name the Snowplow contest. Some of this year's entries are Duck Duck Orange Truck, Plow Bunyan, Snowby Wan Kenobi, and F. Saul Fitzgerald. You think there'd be
Plowy McPlowface?
No, not this year. You'd think there'd be more stuff to do in the winter in Minnesota. We recently held the Miss USA Beauty Pageant. Not to be outdone, Saudi Arabia had their annual Scandal-Ridden Camel Beauty Contest. This year, they disqualified 40 camels for Botox injections and other artificial enhancements. The swimsuit competition must be a real hoot. And finally, a naked and armed New Jersey meat mogul confronted a would-be thief outside his mansion. There's not much more to the story, but I just like saying naked and armed New Jersey meat mogul. Sounds like an episode of The Sopranos. On the podcast today, we have Brian Kilb, Joel Dreesing, and wrapping up the week, here's Kyle Tedding.
Well, thank you very much, Max. Couldn't ask for a better Christmas present than some of those stories. Maybe to top it all off, a good week overall for the markets. The NASDAQ up 3.2% this week. 484 points, closing at 15,653. The S&P 500 up 2.3%, up 105 points to close today at 4,726. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 585 points, 197 today, to close up 1.7% for the week, finishing at 35,951. For the year, the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 19.7%, including dividends. The NASDAQ up 22.2%. And the S&P 500 up 27.5. It's a quick look at the week in review. You know, Brian, as we look at the last 6 weeks, really, we've seen an uptick in volatility. We've seen no shortage of, reasons why the road ahead may persist with some of that volatility. And yet, I think, there's this thing that we keep coming back to where the trend of even knowing what some of the factors are, even understanding what some of the issues are, doesn't always mean that we necessarily know what the outcome is going to be. You look to, the returns the last 6 weeks. We've continued to test new highs for the S&P. And even, as we started 2021, knowing then what we know now, you probably wouldn't have predicted the same outcome we see now.
You know, Kyle, it's kind of a old man thing now. You have a tendency to look back this time of the year and kind of go, well, I've been doing this a long time, and how is it the same? How is it different? And I always kind of get the feeling at this time of year that, wow, it's really kind of a unique year, because in so many ways, you study history like we do, that there are similarities. But yeah, it's different. It feels like a very different year to me. I don't remember a year where I felt as certain about the underlying factors as I did, the labor shortage we've been talking about for months now. If you go back to the beginning of the year, it wasn't a huge agenda item, but we've been talking about it on the show. You and I have been talking about it for months and months. But, inflation has turned out to be, you know, dare I use the word transitory, but it's not transitory, and it's going to stick around for a while. And maybe it's because we had the wrong definition of the word. Maybe it's because it's actually a bigger problem. We'll learn more about that next year. But certainly still kind of a challenge. Supply chain problems have turned out to be, you know, kind of a gnarly issue. And yeah, we're working through those. It looks like there's some hope there in the next few months. But anyway, you go through the laundry list of challenges, and you end up with a situation where it turned out, you know, pretty similar to what you thought it would, right? Now, the good news is earnings have been spectacular. But here we are being mostly right about some challenges, and the market's just had a crazy good year, you know? And it's just that kind of reminder to me that even if you think you know what's going on, you don't always know what the results are going to be in the market. And here we are. I thought valuations were a little pricey at the beginning of the year, but they're even a bit pricier now. So then we start flipping the calendar to next year, and you know what, you know, speculating on where this thing may all go, and there's a lot of different ways it could play out next year. We'll have to see, you know.
And Brian, I'm sorry. One factor that you know that looms before us that you didn't mention that plays a role in all of that laundry list is the pandemic, and you know who would have thought a year ago that we'd be where we are, that and talk about volatility. I mean, just you know, look at where we've gone with caseloads and stuff. But that has impacts on the labor shortage, on people not wanting to go back to the jobs that they had. And if they don't, you know, if they work at a factory, for instance, you know, there's work that's not getting done that can't be done remotely, and so that adds to that supply chain problem that you're talking about. And you know, that all implicates the inflation problem.
You know, I think if you kind of strip things down and you try and look at this in a common sense way, right? And you know, we're forever reminding ourselves it's all about interest rates and earnings. Well, if that's the case, earnings have been extraordinary, interest rates remain very low, surprisingly low, which is something we can talk about. But the thing I can't get out of my head is that the markets do look ahead, you know, and I understand how we got here. Makes all the sense in the world to me, but with price earnings ratios 23-ish now, 21 if you look ahead a year, and the Fed kind of starting to pretty strongly indicate they're tapering faster than we thought. Interest rates will rise, you know, they're predicting 3 times next year or whatever. It's interesting to me that nobody seems too concerned about interest rates going up, you know. And so I think for once, I'm kind of like, well, I thought the markets looked ahead, and it doesn't seem like anybody's looking ahead, because I think if we looked ahead, there would at least be some concerns. Not that we should be scared or worried or panicked or there has to be a crash or a correction even, but just that the upside from here would seem to be somewhat limited, and yet it doesn't feel like that.
Yeah, I think, Brian, the disconnect between the bond markets.
Good word, by the way, yeah.
Between the bond markets and the stock markets is the thing that really has stood out the most, and in particular, you know, you look at the 10-year treasury at 1.5, you look at overnight rates or even 1 or 2 year bonds, you're lucky if you can get 0.25% on those. And of course, a Fed move will force those rates higher naturally. It forces the yield curve to start to flatten out, which is typically a pretty, not bad sign necessarily, but an ominous sign for the economy more broadly. And yet, you know, we're talking about a year in which earnings grew 50% for the S&P 500, double what we thought coming into the year, headed into a year or a couple of years, really, in which earnings will probably grow at high single digits, at least based on forecast. And you start to go, okay, maybe someone's not right here. You're starting to see increases in credit spreads, even on higher quality corporates relative to government bonds. I think telegraphing what we know is coming, which is more volatility. And of course, the challenge about predicting volatility is it still doesn't predict direction. And so I think, you know, we look at the risks on the horizon, and, you know, we talked about some of the ones we thought were out there coming into this year. There's as many or more as we look into 2022. And I think one more reason why we just got to continue to be cautious in our approach.
Yeah, you know, I think, too, if I think back over many previous cycles, you know, I think you and I have talked about this a number of times, but I think part of the reason the market's as propped up as it is because there's just a lot of money out there, you know. And if you go back to post-financial crisis world when, you know, the government became involved fiscally, you know, and of course, lots of monetary activity since, which has made money pretty cheap and given us this environment of easy money, so to speak. So I think if the signal ahead is that we've hit an inflection point there and the needle's going to move the other way, not that there has to be high interest rates, not that there has to be extraordinary inflation or whatever. There's a lot of people singing that tune right now. It doesn't have to happen that way, but they'll certainly have one way to go. And it's just interesting, if not surprising to me, that there isn't more concern about rising interest rates than there, if only because all the other cycles I've been through, you know, the Fed starts to signal a different course and people typically react to that in some fashion, and we haven't in the last couple of months. Just super surprising to me.
Yeah, and I think the hurdle we have is in saying this time's different, right? That, you know, you say it enough times and you end up being wrong most of those times. I think there are some reasons why this time is a little bit different, but that's true of all the previous times that you mentioned where, you know, things started to get a little hairy when the Fed was talking about those rate increases. And so I think, you know, we do need to be mindful of the Fed's action. We do need to be mindful of kind of the way that markets are taking some of that language. And again, I think the challenge we have right now is that we haven't seen the type of response you'd typically see at this point. I think it points to the fact that potentially the Fed's time horizon and stock investors' time horizons are a little bit different right now, that the short-term pressures or near-term pressures we face of the potential for higher interest rates, the less attractive nature of earnings as a result, as it speaks to what you're willing to pay for stocks, and in particular the forward price-to-earnings ratio, I think, you know, that maybe tells you that, you know, the volatility is going to be here to stay for a while, that some of that volatility might lead to the dreaded market correction that we're so overdue for. It doesn't, however, mean that the long-term strategy needs to change drastically. It just means you need to pay attention to some of those signals that are out there. And so I think, you know, as we talk about risks, for me, that's the concern, is just a heightened awareness.
Well, the thing about a correction, you know, is if a bunch of people are going to sell, you know, a bunch of people are going to have to buy. And there really isn't a lot that you want to buy out there right now, right? I mean, it's one thing to say I should buy this expensive stock because there's nothing else to buy. It's another thing to say I should sell it and go do something else. And there isn't a lot of else's to do right now, you know? And so I think the argument for some kind of correction or some kind of, whatever dire word you want to use, you know, I don't know that there's a strong argument for that either. I think the more likely scenario would be continued volatility and maybe a pause for a while things kind of settle up and shake out and kind of come back to some more appropriate level, perhaps, you know. But then what do I know, right?
Yeah, right. That's I think that's what we've learned in all this. Yeah. Yeah. You know, the last 6 weeks, I think, were pretty indicative of the kind of volatility we should expect. A lot of more meaningful up days, a lot of more meaningful down days, and yet, you know, if you look at, you know, some of the challenges we had in November, we're starting to retest some market highs again, depending on where you're looking. And so, you know, even in the midst of some of that uncertainty, we still have, you know, this incredible opportunity out there. If you're participating in the ownership of what's been an incredible source of wealth creation in our country, and that's U.S. corporations.
You know, I think the other thing I would say, Kyle, is just from a common sense standpoint, you know, let's just suggest that maybe we made a little bit more money this year than we thought we would, you know, and let's suggest that stocks are a little bit on the pricey side. We can argue a little more, whatever. But I just kind of thought our job was to buy low and sell high, right? You know, and you break it down to simple elements and whatever. And if you've been given this gift of a really strong year, you know, and you had made, you know, decent profits, maybe even more profits than you expected because prices were more elevated than you thought, wouldn't the smart thing be to just kind of take some of those gains and kind of hedge your bets toward the likelihood maybe that things are going to lean the other way next year, you know? Not because you're predicting bad things necessarily, but just because you're probably not going to get another year like this. That would seem highly unlikely. So I just think sometimes people need to take a step back and just kind of say, well, yeah, maybe I ought to bank some of those winnings because because who knows what's coming next, you know. And it was a good year, so we should maybe appreciate that.
Yeah, plenty to be thankful for with how strong it's been. Joel, a number of economic indicators this week. It was a busy week overall for some of those indicators. You know, the big headline one, the final release of gross domestic product for the third quarter, even a little better than expected in what was a pretty decent quarter.
That's right, Kyle. Yeah, so the GDP is the gross domestic product, what we usually measure the economy with, and that's, you know, that 2.3% growth rate in the third quarter was up from a 2.1% in prior data that the government looked at, and that's actually pretty strong. It's not as strong as the second quarter, which was 6.7%, but it's showing that the economy is actually bigger than it was going into the pandemic. So, you know, we recovered from a recession. We're actually expanding the economy now. That's good. All the signs that, you know, all of the indicators that we're looking at are saying, you know, continued expansion into 2022. And remember, when we started the recession, the economy was pretty strong. It was the longest, you know, growth of the economy in modern history as far as it's been measured for the U.S. So that growth rate for the GDP was pretty good. And a couple of the things that made the upward revision in that number were things like consumer spending, which we know, you know, generates about or drives about 70% of the U.S. economy. So those are good things to look at.
And of course, Joel, one of the things that helps drive consumer spending is household formation. And we got some data this week on home purchases.
Yeah. And, you know, Brian was talking before about how interest rates are going up and it doesn't seem to matter to a lot of people. Well, the National Association of Realtors said that the anticipation of mortgage rates going up with those interest rates is actually what's driving a lot more home buyers to keep buying, even though the cost of buying a house is through the roof, if you wouldn't mind the pun. But it's you know, it's, so it's almost 10 years straight now, every month, that the year-to-year increase in home prices has been up. And still people are buying houses, and there's a shortage of houses on the market, which also adds to the price aspect. What we were talking about before with labor shortage and supply chain problems, that affects the building of new houses. So, you know, we had numbers from the government this week that showed that actually a higher percentage of the new homes being sold are not even built yet. So people are just sort of buying the prospects of them.
Well, and lumber skyrocketing again back to where it was earlier in the spring, getting super expensive. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of impact that has on the housing market. You have a couple different competing, pretty influential bits of pressure in that market.
And that's a good point too, Brian. We were talking about inflation, and we had inflation numbers this week from the GDP numbers, from a monthly look at consumer spending and consumer income. And, you know, we're still seeing like 40-year highs in the inflation rate year to year. And that's something that's, you know, attention grabbing. And yet we also had surveys this week from the University of Michigan and the Conference Board asking consumers how they're doing, how they view the future, and they both rose. And what we're hearing from those surveys so far is that consumers are actually having less concerns about inflation. So, you know, getting back to the maybe this is a transitory thing. I mean, and that's the thing you worry about inflation, right? If people think that inflation is going to be a problem and that impacts their spending, then it becomes a problem.
You know, I think I'm always more interested in some of those forward-looking, if only because what we do is so much about trying to navigate what comes next and not what has happened. And of course, you know, you look at the GDP report or you look at housing sales and you get this idea of, okay, here's where we've come from. And certainly that informs, you know, consumer sentiment or consumer confidence. But I think the other thing that we look at is that survey of leading economic indicators, kind of this gathering of a number of different pieces that are more forward-looking and fairly optimistic, given where we've come from, fairly optimistic about what the path for growth is looking into next year.
That's right, Kyle. And one of the strong components of those leading indicators is the job picture. You know, when we talk about labor shortage, but one of the sides of that is that workers are more confident in getting raises next year and in finding a job if they want to quit the one they're at. And those are the sorts of things that are fueling the confidence that those consumers have in those other surveys that tell us that consumer spending should keep going.
You know, I think what I appreciate about, in particular, our conversation around the table today is just that none of this happens in a straight line, that it's so easy to say that, you know, stock prices follow earnings or affordability follows inflation or wages follow inflation, whatever it is. I think the reality is that there's so many different places that people are in. There's so many different places that various parts of the economy are in at any point in time. And I think grateful as we approach the end of the year now, grateful as we approach Christmas this weekend, that we have done as well as we have, that investors in particular has done as well as they have, mindful of the fact that not everybody else is in the same place, and certainly want to make sure that we keep those people in our thoughts as we kind of get through the end of this year. But, you know, I think, you know, Brian, Joel, Jason, Max, all of us here at Landis & Company, wish you and yours a Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and of course, a Happy New Year. Thanks for listening, and we will talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.